From WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tite. Today on the show, a couple of looks at schools in southeastern Wisconsin. The Public Policy Forum analyzes a stubborn achievement gap.
You're not seeing noticeable improvement in many districts in terms of the gap between the achievement of white students and non-economically disadvantaged students versus African-American students and students who are economically disadvantaged.
Plus, the bottom line for MPS and charter schools. An award-winning teacher shares her secrets to success. And Charles Carter reflects on a half century with the Masonic Wonders, a Milwaukee gospel quartet.
It's been a part of my life. I think it kept me straight. It kept me out of jail. I've been singing with them for 57 years and never been in jail. So I can't give it up now.
Lake Effect is next, after the news. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tike. Great to have you along with us today. We're going to get a few snapshots of the state of education in southeastern Wisconsin in the first half of today's show, both from the front lines and from an analytical perspective. We start with the organization that's taken a macro look at public education performance around the region for the past 27 years. The Milwaukee-based Public Policy Forum has just issued its annual breakdown of performance and funding concerns in public school districts in this corner of the state. Rob Henkin is the president of the forum, and he's with us now to give us a snapshot of the snapshot, if you will. Welcome back, Rob.
Thank you for having me back, Mitch.
The forum has been looking at public school performance for nearly three decades, but let's talk specifically last year to this year. What do you see as the headline representing the current trend in the past 12 months?
Well, Mitch, it's a more difficult question to answer than in previous years because the standards are changing. So proficiency, the definition of proficiency has changed. But overall, we're not seeing much movement, if any, in terms of reading and math score improvement. We are continuing to see the Southeast Wisconsin region outperform the rest of the state in certain college readiness indicators like AP test scores and ACT test scores. But on the whole, it's sort of a status quo message.
Well, and does that go along with a longer-term trend?
I think it does. And again, we have to be very careful. What the Public Policy Forum does every year is tries to provide a look at educational achievement and finance through a regional lens. So when you're looking at the Southeast Wisconsin region, you have to take into account the fact that Milwaukee Public Schools is such a predominant part of that region that as MPS goes, so goes the region in terms of combining the test scores and so on. So really, we're still focusing a lot on MPS and the extent to which it is showing improvement. And I think we're seeing certain areas where test scores are beginning to creep up. We're seeing, in terms of some cohort analysis that we've done, some areas of improvement. But overall, again, not a lot of change. Still the same stubborn issues. And really, I think one of the foremost issues that we have identified year after year is the racial achievement gap. And there we're seeing very little progress as well.
You're now looking at achievement gaps both racially and in economic terms. What are you finding in both of those areas?
Well, let's start with the economic side of the ledger. Another disconcerting finding is the fact that poverty levels continue to grow. So we all were aware of the fact that in the wake of the Great Recession that there would be a greater proportion of students eligible for free and reduced price lunch. That number continues to go up even though the economy has largely stabilized. Obviously, we're not seeing a robust recovery by any means. So the percentage of kids in poverty as defined by free and reduced price lunch, 47% of the students in Southeast Wisconsin. So what we did this year was took a look at academic achievement, not only on the basis of exploring different races, but exploring through the lens of economic disadvantage and found the same troublesome trends. It's not that surprising, given that unfortunately racial characteristics tend to move in tandem with economic disadvantage characteristics. But what we are seeing is sizable gaps, not only in Milwaukee Public Schools and Racine and some of the bigger urban areas, but really in the suburban districts, you're not seeing noticeable improvement in many districts in terms of the gap between the achievement of white students and non-economically disadvantaged students versus African-American students and students who are economically disadvantaged.
Overall, what did you find in terms of achievement across racial demographic lines?
In particular, looking at African-American versus white students, we are seeing sizable gaps. So in reading and math test scores, we're seeing gaps in the 30 or 40 percentage point range in terms of how students are performing, white students versus African-American. We also take a look at graduation rates. The gaps are smaller there, but still very present across the board. And again, what is telling here is that when you look at some of the suburban districts where there is higher achievement overall, you are still seeing some of these very stubborn achievement gaps.
You did mention early on in this interview that there is a positive trend, particularly in southeastern Wisconsin, related to college readiness. What are you finding with that?
Well, our region tends to do very well in terms of ACT scores. And so what is, I think, noticeable there is while there was little movement in the last year for which schools were available for this report, the region is still outperforming the state by several percentage points. And that's happening even though we are also outperforming the state and nationally in terms of the number of test takers. There's been a concerted effort at MPS and in other school districts to make sure that more students are taking the ACT. That type of strategy, while certainly good from an academic achievement perspective, can bring test scores down, but we're not seeing that. So that's, I think, a positive point. AP passage rates, advanced placement scores of 3 or above, continue to increase in the region. And also, the regional 4-year graduation rate has now shown 3 consecutive years of growth.
What about attendance and enrollment?
We are still seeing a decline in enrollment in the region. And in fact, our region in a 0.8 percentage point decline in enrollment, whereas the state as a whole is starting to rebound, a small increase in enrollment statewide. So that's an issue. The rate of decline in enrollment seems to have slowed down a little bit. But in terms of the connection between enrollment and school aides and the state funding formula, that is certainly an issue that has school district administrators throughout the region concerned.
Well, and speaking about funding, what about school finances? That's another component to this analysis is where schools are getting their funding from.
So this year's report, Mitch, was the first our first look at actual school spending and revenue data for the first year post the big changes that occurred in the state budget 2 years ago with Act 10 and the substantial cuts in school aids. And what we found, not surprising, greater reliance on the property tax almost across the board in school districts throughout the region as state aids have diminished. That being said, however, property tax dollars have not necessarily increased. So we are seeing the pie shrink, and so the proportion of property tax as a percentage of the overall school funding pie increasing, but that doesn't mean that more property taxes were levied because, of course, there were these strict caps on the levy that were also part of the same state budget.
You mentioned that the measures of performance have evolved since the Public Policy Forum started doing this, and certainly they've evolved quite a bit in just the last few years.
Yes, we're really seeing a sea change in that regard. One of the big issues that has stemmed the change is the fact that the state has now received a waiver from the federal No Child Left Behind law, which allows the state now to have more latitude in terms of developing its own accountability standards. We have seen an issue with the adoption of the Common Core standards that's being debated in Madison. But what this really means is that there are going to be new tests in place. There are new standards of proficiency. It makes it a little more difficult to do trend analysis. But at the same time, I think one of the important changes that we are seeing is that test taking is designed not only to give us a glimpse of where students are at a particular point in time, but also designed to show us how they are progressing during the school year. So there are much richer data sources that are really able to now give us a broader picture of academic achievement. The fact that gaps and closing the gap is now a very important accountability standard hopefully will refocus school districts across the state on that very critical issue. But it does, from the perspective of the Public Policy Forum, it makes it more difficult to produce this report because there is just so much data out there now. And as we are changing our definitions of success, we need to change our trend analysis.
Rob Henkin, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Rob Henkin is president of the Milwaukee-based Public Policy Forum. There is a link to the organization's new analysis of public school funding and performance from WUWM.com/lakeeffect. Milwaukee's online neighborhood news service examined one particular aspect of school performance. We'll hear about their look at charter schools when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio. Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. As we heard before the break, comparing academic performance between districts is one way to assess how schools are doing in southeastern Wisconsin, but it's also not that simple. In Milwaukee in particular, school choice complicates the equation. Enrollment in MPS doesn't just depend on how many students live in the district, but how many parents choose to send their kids to charter or voucher schools. Milwaukee's online neighborhood news service recently looked at how the number of schools chartered by MPS compares to the number of independent charter schools in the city. Reporter Edgar Mendez joins us to share what he learned. Hey, Edgar, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me back, Mitch.
What was the question you set out to answer in examining charter schools?
I kept on hearing about new charters opening and all these entities coming from other parts of the country to open schools here in Milwaukee. So I was basically wondering how it was affecting the bottom line at MPS and whether MPS was getting in the charter game too.
Well, and in terms of bottom line, you're talking about both enrollment but also achievement, correct?
Right. I looked at the comparison between independent charters and MPS charters also.
Before we get to what some of your findings were, let's get some definitions out of the way. What are the distinctions in terms of who can charter schools in Milwaukee? There are schools that are actually chartered by MPS, and there are schools that, as you say, are independently chartered.
Right. There are two different kinds of schools that are chartered by MPS, which would be instrumentality and non-instrumentality, with the difference being basically one of them has union teachers. But also the city of Milwaukee can charter schools and UWM can charter schools. So can MATC and UW-Parkside, but they don't charter any schools in Milwaukee. But basically, someone interested in opening a charter school would have to go through an application process and would just choose between authorizer.
Talk about numbers. MPS still charters the most in the city, correct?
Right. MPS right now is currently chartering 29 schools, while UWM charters 12 and the city of Milwaukee charters 10.
And this is actually a declining number, though, for MPS.
Right. Just 2 years ago, MPS was chartering 38 schools. So that's quite a significant drop, while the number of charter schools authorized by either City of Milwaukee or UWM has actually gone up each of the last 5 years.
Well, what did you learn in terms of MPS's strategy? Why they might not be as aggressive as some in authorizing charter schools?
They acknowledge that they're losing $8 million a year to students attending independent charters. But what they said is that a school has to fit within a need. It has to provide something innovative, something different that they don't offer already, and it also has to fill a need within the school. For example, the Banner School, which I highlighted in the piece, in a separate piece, is going to be a middle school. So there's not a lot of middle schools currently operating in MPS.
You actually, as you say, you went to Banner School or you examined Banner School. You also examined independent charters that are chartered to the city of Milwaukee and to UWM. Why did you look specifically at the schools you did? And maybe you should mention which particular schools you looked at.
Well, aside from Banner, which is an MPS charter, I visited Woodlands East, which is a UWM charter. That's actually the second Woodlands charter that's authorized by UWM. And I visited Rocket Ship. I'm sure people have heard of Rocket Ship. They've been in the news quite a bit lately.
Well, and so what did you look at when you went to those places?
I went to each school just basically trying to find out what the differences were, maybe their educational approach, the curriculum, the school model. And basically what I found is they're all pretty similar. I mean, they're all based on we need parents to be more involved. They operate like a typical charter school. They all have – well, they do have different models. I mean, Rocket Ship is really computer-based. So they put a heavy emphasis on students using technology. Woodlands East, I was surprised to go visit them a few weeks ago and walking into a classroom where K-4 and K-5 students were learning French. That in itself amazed me. And Banner had a different story. Banner was also using innovative approach to teaching. But what I took away from Banner was Banner took any student. So Banner was taking students that were kicked out of other MPS schools, you know, basically students that were falling out of the system and trying to get them to achieve at high levels.
You mentioned the bottom line in terms of what MPS is losing dollar-wise by having students go to these independent charter schools. But what about bottom line in terms of performance? I know in your piece, you have the principal of Woodlands East saying, well, you know, if the students would do better at MPS, they'd be more likely to stay in those places. So they're all about performance. You analyzed performance. What did you find out?
I looked specifically at MPS charters and independent charters, and I found that only 47% of independent charters were meeting state expectations, and this is the Wisconsin DPI report card, while MPS charters, 60% of them were meeting expectations. Now, I must note that 8 schools were missing from the analysis, so it was sort of an incomplete picture, but basically it kind of went against what I was hearing, which is also something I heard from Christian D'Andrea. He's a policy analyst for the McIver Institute, and he was basically saying the same thing, that MPS needs to improve the quality of their schools if they want these students.
But the message you found is that that just because a school is a charter doesn't necessarily guarantee that the performance is going to be better.
Right, definitely. I found they were very similar in performance.
You mentioned the McIver Institute. You talked to some other analysts as well, including Alan Borsuk, who was former education reporter at the Journal Sentinel, now at Marquette University. What did he say in terms of the strategy that MPS is employing?
He talked about MPS actually being quite aggressive in getting new charters. He said the numbers don't show it, but actually the slight increase in enrollment that they had this year, which was their first increase in, I couldn't even tell you how long, probably a decade, if not longer, that was a sign pointing to them being more aggressive. And he also mentioned Universal, which is coming into the city and opening up a number of schools, and the Milwaukee College Prep system of schools.
Were there other takeaways that you got from doing the reporting for this story?
Yes. What I took away from it and what I got from one of the last statements I got from Christian D'Andrea, who was saying MPS needed to have better schools if they wanted to get more students. Well, he said that the district needed to convince MPS parents and students that their schools are effective. Now, looking at the data shows that their schools are just as effective as independent schools. So I talked to Dati Joseph, who's also with MPS, and she said that many of the MPS charters are very effective, but they need to do a better job getting into the communities and promoting all their charter schools has to offer. So what that points out to me is that MPS is dealing more with an image problem than they are with actual problems with the effectiveness of their schools.
Edgar Mendez, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Edgar Mendez reports for the online Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. You'll find a link to his special report on charter schools in Milwaukee from WUWM.com/lakeeffect. A teacher at one MPS authorized charter school has been recognized for her early career work. We'll meet her when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio. More of Lake Effect now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Before the break, Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service reporter Edgar Mendez talked about his special report on the bottom line for charter schools in Milwaukee. He also referenced one MPS charter school that's seen as performing especially well. Milwaukee College Prep offers classes at 3 campuses on Milwaukee's north side. It's 36th, 38th, and Lloyd Street schools. Its 1,400 students face challenging life situations. Almost 9 in 10 of them qualify for free or reduced lunch. And yet, the school's intense academic and career-based education results in the vast majority of students scoring advanced or proficient in reading and math and going on to graduate from high school. The students start each day with a morning assembly that is one part marching orders and one part pep rally.
Today is the first day of the second quarter! So exciting. And it's mission statement morning!
The kids leave the morning assembly, many of them giving their teachers a hug before heading into the classroom. The teachers seem just as enthusiastic to get to work. Second grade teacher Lauren Boyd is a good example. This fall, Boyd, who is in her third year as a full-time teacher, won the Education Deans of Greater Milwaukee Early Career Award. We sat down with Lauren Boyd and her principal at the 38th Street campus, Maggie Olson, to talk about what it takes to succeed at teaching. Olson says it turns out the hugs at the morning gathering are emblematic of something bigger.
We really believe that kids have to love school. And if we love school, they're going to love learning. And if they love learning, half the battle's there. And they have to be here to learn. One of the other things is that when I'm looking for teachers, I'm looking for people who love kids and believe all kids can learn, first and foremost. Lauren is a great example of someone who just loves her job, loves kids, will go above and beyond. And it is, we are a huggy place. We hug parents, we hug each other, we hug the scholars. It's just something that we do, and we really want everyone to feel that love so they feel safe and they know that no matter what, that we're going to push them to college and beyond.
When you went to school to become a teacher, did you imagine that you were going to get to school and be hugging your students?
No, I did not. But that's a thing that makes you a successful teacher, is building that relationship and having your students know that they can trust you, that you love them, that you respect them for who they are, and just really showing that daily. And that starts, you know, with that hug. Really simple interaction that shows that.
Well, and she just said that one of the things that she sees in you is that you love teaching. So let me ask you the big question here. What is it that you love about teaching?
I would much rather spend my day with a group of children with all their energy and creativity and desire to really show their best all the time than being in any sort of other setting. This is just, it's a warm place when you walk in the door. My classroom is a warm yet rigorous environment. I really push them, even though I love them, I push them daily beyond their comfort zone to really make sure that they're ready, that they're performing at grade level and above that, and that they're going to be ready to be successful adults or successful middle school students or college students.
Let me ask you this question, Maggie Olson, and that is, you're assembling a group of teachers that is teaching students that might have the deck stacked against them in some ways outside of school, and that's what perhaps brought them here. What is it that makes a good teacher?
We really believe in mission-based hiring at Milwaukee College Prep. And I really feel like at Milwaukee College Prep 38th, we're walking on the shoulders of giants that came before us, like Rob Rao and Carrie Flitz, who were and Kristen Foster, who are at their original campus. So we're replicating their success at the 36th Street campus. And one of their main tenets is mission-based hiring. When I look in the eyes of the teachers that I'm interviewing, and I say, do they love kids? Do they believe? Because everything else we can help them get better at. If you struggle with lesson plans, we can help you get better at writing lesson plans. We can help you be a stronger reading teacher, a stronger math teacher. But what really truly makes a great teacher is that they love kids and they love their job and they work hard. Like, you can love the kids all day long, but if you don't have the work ethic, because we expect a lot. One of our tenets here at Milwaukee College Prep is play hard, work hard. So we play hard. We have a really good time. It's really fun, but the work is really hard. It's hard work to get 401 students quiet to a volume zero after dancing and partying and then going, okay, now we're going to get in a straight line. That takes a lot of time. That takes a lot of practice. And our teachers really hold that high expectation. So it's this really unique balance of high expectations and love. So that's, to me, is the perfect mix for a great teacher.
This is your fifth year as a teacher, third year here, right?
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
What did you not know that when you got into this business that you think you get now? I mean, if you were going back 5 years and you were going to talk to the brand new Lauren Boyd teacher, what would you tell her?
I didn't know how important it was to know every single student at their level, their learning level, their life outside of school, their family, building those relationships with them and with whoever is in their family, how critical that is to their success. When they feel loved, connected to you, supported, it helps build those learning connections even better in the classroom.
Well, and one of those things that you just mentioned, the idea knowing the level of each of your students seems like an underrated part of the teaching equation. You're not just teaching second grade, you are teaching second graders who are at a variety of different skill levels. How do you balance the need to challenge the students that are ahead and doing really well with meeting the needs of the kids that need more help with meeting the needs of the kids that are right in the middle.
Right. It is challenging, and those levels can be a wide spectrum, but we have great supports here at Milwaukee College Prep. I have an educational assistant who is integral with pulling out those small groups, both challenging the higher level students and then bringing those up to grade level who aren't quite there, because as you said, you know, we see a wide range coming in at the same age level, but we have a lot of curriculum support, a lot of guidance with our academic deans and things, and it takes a lot of work, a lot of planning, and just being really organized with everything.
We hear a lot about the challenges that elementary school teachers in particular have with dealing with the number of standardized tests that they have to teach around, and talk about the balance between, you know, trying to get kids to understand what they're going to be tested on with teaching kids that what they're there to do is learn and master the stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to bring it down to their level in, as far as like real life examples and connections, things they already know, things they experience outside of school. Because when you can connect a math concept to when you're shopping at Target, for instance, they understand that or can connect to that better. And then just making it fun. It's definitely challenging, but as much as you can build that fun in there, it makes the rigor a little bit easier for them to handle.
And I also think that when we talk about standardized tests, it's something that happens in our life. To get into college, you have to take the ACT or SAT. To become a teacher, you have to take the Praxis. So it's a life skill to be able to take tests. But our goal is not to get our scholars to be great test takers. Our goal is to get them to be great human beings who are successful in college and beyond. And this is just one of those small things that are going to be a great way to show that they're doing well. It's a challenge, and we actually have a lot of fun around testing. I actually, like, my sister is a teacher somewhere else, and she goes, I've never seen kids so excited to take the MAP test. We have a wrap. We have we give out tickets when they're successful and they meet their goals. There's really a lot of student ownership about their data, and teachers really own the data that we use to drive instruction. So that really helps too, because it's not just we're using this data in a vacuum. Like, this is it. We just take this test, and then we never see it again. It's we take this test and how can we improve on it? What are the things that our kids don't know? What do they need to know? And use that to inform our instruction.
And then it's also about teaching them the test-taking skills and strategies, the problem-solving skills, the critical thinking. How can I eliminate choices or look at a set of answers and really fit those into the problem? And so just showing students the way to do that, not just, you know, memorizing facts or things like that.
Well, what does a second grader get about college? I mean, the homerooms are all named for different colleges and universities, and obviously this is Milwaukee College Prep. How well do you think second graders understand what college really is?
We talk about it a lot. We actually took a tour of the campus at UW-Milwaukee, so they kind of get an idea of what a lecture hall looks like, what life on campus looks like. But I think at this age level, it's exposure is really important, just getting them in that mindset, like, this is a possibility for me, and this is what I'm doing and where I'm going.
As a classroom teacher, what's the kind of support that's important to get from the staff and administration?
I think feedback is really important. Even though I've been teaching 5 years, I learn new things every day from other people around me. So I think that constructive and positive feedback is really important for me to hear to help me continue to grow and continue to be better. We deal with lesson plans a lot. Those are really important to do with a lot of detail for me to be organized, but then also for my administration to see the standards that I'm meeting and to see the things that I'm doing in my classroom to understand why I'm doing activities. Because if there's not an intent behind what you're doing, then you need to question why you're actually doing it in the classroom.
Were you a teacher before you did this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was a special ed teacher at the high school level for 4 years, and I really loved teaching. And that's the great thing about being a principal here is I still get to teach every day. At Assembly, I always said, that's my classroom. I want to model what it looks like with 400 students. I also get to teach every week at the staff meetings, which is really fun. I also get to help coach my academic dean, Allison Peterson, and our behavior dean, Brittany Sanderson, who work really hard to make sure that our scholars and teachers are getting everything they need. So that's really a fun part of my job.
I think at the elementary school level, from what I've seen at other elementary schools, there is a lot of interaction between the principal and not just the teachers, but the students as well. What role do you see yourself playing when students are coming up to you?
Oh, I mean, I am the first one to give a hug and a high five to all of our scholars. I want them to love school. I want them to know that I'm there for them, that I'm their support, that if something's not okay, they can come talk to me. Because every adult in our building should be someone that they trust. And if they trust me, that kind of trickles down. And I also need to model to the kids that this isn't a scary thing. Authority is a good thing. You want to know how to be respectful to authority, how to give the support you need so that when they're older and they go to a different school or they go to college, they know how to access people and aren't afraid to ask their college deans, not afraid to ask for help or not afraid to ask. So I try to help with that.
Is this hard?
Teaching?
Yeah.
Yes, it's difficult. It's challenging work, but it's so gratifying. And, you know, there's days where you walk away and you're like, oh, man, but tomorrow is a new day, so I'm going to try that again. Or, you know, you just keep with those kids and you see their growth throughout the year and then you see them next year. And it's just an amazing profession to be in. And I wouldn't want to come to work any other place. I'm happy to come here every day.
What do you see your role when it comes to interacting with your kids' parents?
Every year I start off the year with introductions at our open house. I think it's so important that right from the bat we have a relationship, very open communication. I make positive phone calls every other week to families just saying, hey, this is what's going really great with your scholar. I don't want them to say, uh-oh, it's Miss Boyd calling. There must be some problem or behavior. So I think it's just really important to build those bonds so that we can keep in contact with each other. They know their student better than I do and can help me help them be successful in the classroom.
After 5 full years of being in this profession, do you find yourself giving advice to other teachers?
I do, yeah. I've definitely become a mentor teacher to some new teachers. My second grade teaching partner, Whitney Chin, is fantastic and very high energy and learning every day, and I learn from her as well. So it's really great because even as a veteran teacher, I feel like I'm getting new ideas from her, and then I can be that support for her too.
Well, and so what do you see as the biggest challenge day in, day out when you know you're still fired up about going to school, but you still have this one thing sitting out there that, oh God, I got to deal with this again?
It's always something sitting out there. I never feel done. I'm always working, changing, reflecting on what I'm doing, coming in with a new plan of attack with a particular concept if students aren't getting it. So that was something that I had to come to terms with, that in teaching, you're just never done. I think about it at night. I do it on the weekends. Like, it's always kind of there in my brain, but that's good. I mean, that's what it is supposed to be.
Is it fair that it's this hard?
The thing is that it is fair to our kids. I think it's really important that our scholars deserve the best, and we really work hard on trying to support our staff. So we, because it is such hard work, we try to do fun things. We do monthly outings as a staff. We have our great hoop squad, which is the happiness of our people, that kind of do these really cute random acts of kindness just to kind of bring so our morale is high, because this is tough work. But we really work hard on being a family atmosphere and really supporting people in their goals and dreams and pushing our teachers to be better. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. And if I wanted to do something different, it could be easier, but nothing is more rewarding than this. And I think when you look at our assemblies and you see those smiles, and at the end of the year you see the scholar who came in at a K-5 reading level in fourth grade and now is in a third grade reading level, like that is what that keeps me going. That is the reward that this work does.
And it's hard work, yes, but it's also hard work to change some of the suffering schools we see in our city and to really bring those opportunities to our students. That doesn't happen in one day or one school year, but it has to start somewhere.
Let me ask you honestly, do you ever tear up at these assemblies?
Yes, I do. I think sometimes it becomes normal. Like, this energy level becomes very like, oh, this is what we do every morning. And you forget that it's special. Every once in a while, we had a group of kids sing We Are the World for Student Showcase. And I got really teary because they did such an amazing job. Or when you see the K-4s grow and really come from being very shy and very, like, timid to being so loud and proud. So those moments, or you see a scholar who really struggled with stage fright or confidence come out and really, like, rock it out. Like, that's when you get a teary-eyed.
I agree. And sometimes when we're sharing successes of just watching particular scholars and what they've been able to achieve and sharing that with the whole school, like, it's really touching. And especially if it's someone who I have a personal connection with or has been a student of mine or is a student of mine. So yeah, it's just special to see what kids are capable of in a really positive, hardworking environment.
Well, Lauren Boyd, Maggie Olson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Lauren Boyd is a second grade teacher at Milwaukee College Prep's 38th Street campus. Maggie Olson is the principal. Boyd recently won the Education Deans of Greater Milwaukee's Early Career Award. You can see a slideshow from the school's morning assembly at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One last break, and then we'll meet the Masonic Wonders, who have been making gospel music in Milwaukee for more than a half century. This is Lake Effect from WUWM. More of Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. The Masonic Wonders have been continually performing black gospel music in Milwaukee since 1956, when they formed the group at a local Masonic lodge. Two of the four original members, Charles McCollum and Charles Carter, are still with the quartet, and even the newer members, Sylvester McIntosh and Felix Willis, have been with the group for more than two decades. The group and its backup band has recorded two albums and have played gigs from Summerfest to local churches. Lake Effect's Bonnie North met up with them as they rehearsed at the Newborn Christ Baptist Church at 17th and Center, ahead of a September appearance at Alverno College's Global Union Music Festival.
Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of the death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me.
Well, it came to Milwaukee in August the 6th, 1956, and it's been going ever since. So this year, September the 21st and 22nd, we'll be celebrating 57 years of singing.
And you're also celebrating by singing at Global Union this year, which I understand is the first time a local Milwaukee group has been asked to perform.
Is that right? Well, we was one of the first group that sung at the Summerfest. Well, what would that tell?
About 94.
94, 95, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with this makeup, with all of you?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. At the Gospel Fest, yes.
Okay.
It was us. It was us.
So how do you guys all know each other? How did you get together and decide that, you know, I mean, I know, sir, that you started the group, but how did these gentlemen get involved?
Well, one of the members that are deceased now brought Willis, and he brought McIntosh. I brought Carter. So that's the way it go. This guy has been singing with me for 57 years.
Yeah, I started singing with them about 2 months after they got started, and I couldn't even sing at all, so they took me in and taught me how to sing. Now I keeps them in line.
Did you know each other in church? Is that how, were you friends? How did that work?
I met him in church. We're going to a church by the name of the Macedonia Missionary Baptist Church. At the time, it was on 5th and Valete, and that's why I met him. And I asked him about singing and so forth, and yeah, I can sing.
So you lied in church?
I really did. I knew nothing about singing with a group. I couldn't even keep time. So after I got started with them, and it's been a part of my life. I think it kept me straight. It kept me out of jail. I've been singing with them for 57 years, and I've never been in jail. So I think that kind of kept me straight. So I can't give it up now.
What was it about Charles that convinced you to do it, since you didn't know how to sing?
Well, I think I lacked the guys when they come by. They just, it was some guys that I just lacked. I liked to deal with them, and we'd go out together at night, and I just like brothers. So, and then we got started singing, and they said, well, you sound pretty good, so, and every time, and I just lacked it more and more. So, I guess I'm here to stay.
And what about you, gentlemen?
Well, I've been with the 34 years. So I met, like you say, I came through Arthur Mitchell, James Mitchell. Through our runner, had a store at the time, so we started coming, and we just got to talking, you know, and the other guy used to, we sat around and sang a little bit inside in the store, and he heard us, so he invited me to come to a rehearsal, and I've been there ever since.
So are you the most recent of the four, or is that you?
I've been there 34 years.
Right.
I'm the youngest.
And how many years for you?
Oh, about 25.
Just a youngster.
Yeah, just a youngster, just beginning.
Yeah, just learning, actually.
And like he said, Brother Mitchell was the one that I was singing previously with another group, and he kept after me to come and sing with them. And after the group that I was with broke up, then I came, you know, and I've been here ever since. I don't have no intentions of going anywhere else with the Masonic Wonders.
What is it about singing like this that keeps you wanting to do it year after year? 57 years is a long time for any kind of a relationship, let alone a creative one where everybody often has different ideas about how things are supposed to go. Is it because this is praise music? Is it because you're doing this in service?
Mostly the religious work. That's my outlook on it. The more for religious type things, socially, you know. Like I said, I enjoy being with the fellas, you know. Got accustomed to being around them.
Then we all are just one. Yeah. This is just one. We all decide the same thing. We have to agree. If you don't agree, you're not going to stay together. So we have to agree, and there's no big I's and little U's. We're here, be here to one another. One has got the best idea. That's the way we go. A lot of guys say, hey, you the star. No, we don't have no stars in the group. There's no star here. All of them, if it's a star, all of them are stars. Not just one person, you know. We don't believe in that.
All of the arrangements you do all together?
Yes.
And so everybody has to agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the way any musical group really has to do it. You really have to all feel it. Otherwise, it's not going to show up on stage.
Definitely. See, we can't get up on the stage fighting each other. You know, one want to do this, one want... It can't work that way. We all got to have the same mind. We're all going in the same direction. So that's the way it's got to be. Or don't be nothing.
So what is the direction the Masonic Wonders are going in?
Well, we're trying to go higher heights in the Lord. We did a CD called Higher in the Lord. And that's what we're trying to do. Go higher in the Lord. This man made us, and he knows all about us. And he do all of the honor. He don't owe us nothing. We owe it all to him. So that's the way we see it, you know. We were raised up in church, and the Bible said, train a child while he's young. When he get old, he will not depart from it, you know. So that's what happened to us.
Look like it's working now. For 57 years, we can't turn it loose. For me, it's a ministry to me. And it really kept me straight, and I like singing. And when it's done good, I just love it, regardless of who it is. So we sound good to one another. We don't know what other people think, but we sound all right to ourselves, so that keeps us going.
Well, when it works, you know, it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck, you know?
Yeah.
And you feel that, and an audience feels that when you feel it.
Yeah. Well, when you're singing, if you can't fit it, it's no use of singing.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be a part of you. You know, you got to feel it.
If you can't fit it, you can't look for nobody else to fit it.
You're standing on the up, Jesus.
So you have one CD, two. Are there plans to do more?
I don't know. I'm kind of young now. So I don't know. If they push me, I have to obey the group.
Well, you know. Group, what do you think? You have more tunes that should go?
We would like to do one more. We get in, you know, up in age now. At least one more. I wish we could do one more. At least. Have some for our grandkids to listen at later.
Are there songs that you would particularly like to put on another album that you haven't recorded yet?
Yeah, we got some songs.
Well, we got a list
and then
of songs.
That we could put on an album, you know. And I know once in a while he'll come up, Charles will come up with something new that's old that I very much enjoy singing. And this guy here, he loves the same. Lord Charles liked to sing most of the time, and I enjoy it, and very much, you know, them old songs.
Like
you know.
What?
Oh, what's the last song that you sang for me, Charles?
You know what I like to hear you sing. There's so many of them. I can't think of all of them.
Jesus will help me when I need him most.
Yeah,
Jesus saved my soul. You know, those different songs that were. We sang, we don't have those on the CD, but we sang songs that we all like, you know. And then if we sang something that don't nobody like, we change it and go somewhere else, come there with something different. You know, everybody have to be satisfied with this, you know, not just one person. It's no just one person thing. This is a united group, and, you know, we have to all be satisfied with what we're doing. Other than that, it won't work.
Well, you just did a really interesting version of Amazing Grace. I loved that because I've never heard it done quite that way. Where did that come from? Because you segued beautifully from another hymn into that, but it was so different. I mean, I immediately knew it was Amazing Grace, but it was different.
That was another song that kind of come into that. It's Lonesome Journey from, I think, Charles and Amos.
Yeah, my brother brought that song to the group, and... we've been singing it off and on ever since. And so, right then we got another way that our brother McIntyre sang it. We sang the Amazing Grace two different ways. So,
give me a little taste of that.
Just a little country fire.
Just a little country fire? A
little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
We actually did this one with Steve Cohen and Peter and the band.
Okay.
Steve Cohen. Put in a harmonica part for us. Released it as a single.
Usually this on his song, Charles sang bass on.
Yeah, he does bass.
This is where you actually get to sing the bass.
Yes. It's good. He can sing.
Oh, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves
me.
Was blind. Say it again. Oh, amazing grace,
sweet, sweet
song,
saved a wretch like me.
You know I once was
came to Jesus and I was weary, wounded, and sad. You know I found in him a resting place, and he
Charles McCollum, Charles Carter, Sylvester McIntosh, and Felix Willis are the vocalists that make up the Masonic Wonders. They spoke with Bonnie North ahead of their concert at the Global Union Festival in September, and you can see photos from the recording session and hear all of the songs at wuwm.com/legeffect. That's all for Tuesday's edition of the show. I'm Mitch Teich. It's so great to have you listening today. I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock. You know I'm lost.